it's May 6th, and I'm at the Riley School talking with Sheila Dassett of the Down East Lobstermen's Association. Sheila's been executive director of the Down East Lobstermen's Association for long enough that she's gotten to know the Maine legislature by going to their annual meetings every winter and spring. And so I'm going to ask her about some of the things that went down this particular political season that ended, a month ago or less. In particular, were there lobster bills or things that related to lobstering and things that were of most concern to the association?
Yes, absolutely. There were two in particular that we participated in. One was the licensing bill. That was originally the bill LD-1503. And that had to do with student lobster and crab fishing license eligibility. And the waiting list concerning the apprentices that have been on the list in the closed zones for such a long time. And the other bill that we worked on that were the predominant bills was the LD-1653, which was an act implementing pay increases for certain law enforcement employees to aid in recruitment and retention. And it was prepared March 11th, 2016.
Now, all right, so did both of these bills pass or something?
Yes, this one, concerning the recruitment and retention, we had a problem keeping Marine patrol officers because it had been a while since the Maine enforcement officers, state troopers, the inland fisheries, the Marine Patrol, had received a substantial raise to keep them, on the job. And the Marine patrol officers, they go through an extensive training as well. And it was really difficult to keep them on the job in the areas.
It's terrible. After all that training, they just suddenly realize they can't afford it. I knew the Maine State Prison has that same problem for its enforcement people. They make less than any of the police, and they don't get any raises, and the turnover is just tremendous. So you don't have much institutional memory of how to do things. And so that's been a challenge for the lobstermen, is that you have either not enough of them or always newbies that have to learn the whole thing.
We had some newbies that were all trained, but they regretfully went to a different area. They might have gone to law enforcement, but they might have gone to New Hampshire or, a different location.
So what did the bill do?
The bill, actually, the governor signed it about 2 weeks ago and it enabled them to get the pay increase that they needed. And we needed the extra money to train them as well.
Now let's go back to the first bill. Can you give me its name again? The first one you mentioned?
It is... I don't know if... the name of it, it was LD-1503. And it basically was... I have the bill here.
Well, as I understand it from, listening to the hearings, there's a huge challenge that if you want to, for anyone else, tell me if I'm right here, for your average person that wants to lobster, they have to get on a waiting list that could be 10 years waiting, because only when somebody leaves can someone come in. They don't want it to grow out of control. Mm-hmm. And so that's been something that I met a guy, said, guess what? I'm getting my lobster license, finally. And he was so happy because if you're a good fisherman, it's a great career. But then this comes up going, well, young people, they ought to be allowed to just get a license, right? After all, a job and all that. And he's right in. And so you can imagine all these long waiters going, wait a minute. I've been here 6-7 years. You're just going to give these pimply little punks. You're just going to give these people right and access. Was that kind of the challenge?
Well, I found the title, the official title, was An Act to Create a Class II Limited Lobster and Crab Fishing License and Improve the Limited Entry System. That's the official title of the bill. Mm. And our association, Down East Lobstermen's Association, actually held a meeting before this hearing and worked on it. Representative Walter Camega was at our meeting.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that hosted the bill for the governor. And we gave some constructive suggestions. We didn't oppose it. We didn't say we were in favor because we knew it needed some amendments. And it was very, very constructive. For the most part, we were the only association that came to the hearing and turned over some suggested, real workable suggestions. We didn't want the bill killed because, personally, I'm in the same shoes. I had a lobster license back when the zones were created. And people figured if they let their license go, they didn't realize it was going to be that difficult to be on that waiting list.
Oh.
So I don't have my license, and if I were to go on that waiting list the way that it stood, I probably wouldn't live long enough to get my place on the list.
And that's not really much of an exaggeration.
No.
No.
And so,
and yet at the same time, you can see the, how do we keep young people here?
Exactly.
You know, and so what was the compromise? Because you said it's like a limited license, which probably means you can't have as many traps or...
Well, one of the things that I have Jeff Pierce's amendment here that was before it was officially decided, and you have to be a full-time student, but now it doesn't end when they turn 18. It has been extended to the age of 23 because when they graduate high school, they still have 4 years of college.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of the students, when they are in high school, they like to participate in band or football or sports or whatever, and the time required to get the student license, really, it was quite a crunch.
Oh, so they have this extra time. They don't have to be in a college, you're saying?
They have to be enrolled in a school.
Oh.
They have to have their diploma. Receive a high school diploma or a high school equivalency diploma before attaining 21 years of age and held a student lobster and crab license prior to attaining 18 years of age and log time fishing under the student lobster and crab fishing license under, and it goes on and on and on, but it's all
so
right.
It starts winnowing down who can do it, so it's... That's not just a blanket. Anyone who's between 18 and 23 can jump in at all. They have to have that history and all that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But in favor of the apprentice list, now they're going to go over the list and see how many people are still interested or deceased or, you know, pare this list down and see who is sincere. Some of the zones now are changing from tags in and out. Each trap represents a tag, so you have to have 800 tags.
Mm-hmm.
That's complicated. I won't get into all of that on the interview, but a license in and a license out shortens that length of time that's on the waiting list.
Mm.
So some of the zones, I believe it's Zone A and Zone B, is working on these questions. Zone A, I believe, has changed to licenses in and out.
Now, is Zone A the southern Maine? Or
Eastern Maine.
Eastern Maine, okay. The other direction
east.
Comes from
yeah.
east to west. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, let me ask you also, you've been to the legislature with a succession of different Marine Resource Committee memberships over the time there. And so how did this year's stack up? I mean, I saw there are people like Representative Camega and others that have been there a while.
Here they are, right? Here's the list. of the Marine Resource Committee.
Okay.
And I felt it was a very, very good committee to work with. They're caring.
Senator Miramont's on there.
Yeah. Representative or Senator Linda Baker is the chair of the Marine Resource mm-hmm. Committee, and she is very, very good, very fair. I felt very comfortable testifying with this group of people,
mm.
and they will listen. If some of the people on the Marine Resource Committee don't have a marine background, so they need to understand what we're talking about a little bit better.
So, mm. so it, there's no sort of in-house training for committee members. I wonder, each committee ought to have something like that.
Yeah.
Like the definition of major words are going to hear over and over again or something. But
yeah.
but maybe there isn't one at this point. Hmm. And did anything get left dangling? Or are there things that just thrown over are going to end up being worked on next year?
Oh, I'm sure it, maybe some of the other bills, but the ones that we were working with, we were very pleased with the outcome.
Now, there was one that ended up getting just slaughtered. I guess it was the ocean acidification bill.
Yeah.
Two sessions running, it got a thumbs down. And
yeah.
and did the association ever have a position on that one? Or?
Well, we've gone over that subject. Even we had proposals on the Red Board, which is a lobster license plate board, research, education, and development. And for the time being, it's like everybody's jumping on that bandwagon.
Mm.
I mean, everybody, it's the subject of the industry. So which way do we go? We need more. We actually need more answers on that.
Mm. You know, it seemed like the legislators, that was their challenge, is they were being deluged with people saying, you know, this is a real problem, so we need money. And that was mm-hmm. the big problem was the whole point of the legislation was for the state to take this up as their own commission, fund it, and then these different conservation groups would all be the stakeholders and so on. And the legislature, I thought, sensibly said, well, if we look at all those folks that are so much in favor of this, those big budget eco groups and so on, why don't you guys do it? You know, you don't need us. You don't need taxpayer money for this.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that a lot of these groups, like, I won't name any, blanched, like, oh, no, we don't want to spend our money on this. But because they wouldn't change that, the bill got thumbed down. And so it's unfortunate. To me, the other big failure of it, besides wanting money, is that none of them had anything that they'd say, so we're going to do this to reduce acidity here or there. It's just, you're going to give us money, we're going to study more. And what results we get, who knows?
Yeah.
And that's why I tried very hard to inject GAC chemical into the whole mix. And I think I got them to add in there not just the acidification from the coal smoke from the Midwest or whatever, but are there legacy acid spots around the coast that need to be dealt with?
Mm-hmm.
And up in Stockton Harbor, the GAC chemical plant was from the 40s to the 70s making sulfuric acid and then making fertilizer from using that and phosphates, and bad batches or something went along, would line the shoreline with it. And so now that it's leaking, let's just say several owners later, they stopped maintaining these shores. And so there's this technicolored fact. There's this. Let's see how these plumes are coming out. Here's, see this stuff here? Yeah, that and that. And this is all fill from here out. This is the old shoreline. And so this is the abandoned acid plant. And other factories and things are gone. So this here, there aren't even any diatom shells in the sand there. Dr. Mark Green from a university St. Joseph's, asked us to take samples following his, you know, standards there. And we did that from basically going down like that and then some other places around the shore. And it was like pH is like 2 right around here. And it slowly modified down, but even here it was well below the safe numbers. And if you just think of that day after day, year after year, every tide, and Sears Island, because the causeway lets that bay concentrate, I'm not surprised that Stockton Harbor doesn't have a whole lot of fisheries or things in it. So finally, after 14 years of pestering them, they dug up this area right here. They discovered a big sulfur pit that was actually, I guess, around here. And it had been, they had sulfur piled there that conveyor belted into the thing. And then when they stopped, they sold the sulfur off except for the dirty, muddy stuff in the pit. And they just gravelled over and left it there. So every rain and so on is just sort of flushed through. So they took that out. And I've been trying to, I've been failing trying to get drones up in the air to take a look at the plume this year. But in theory, at least some of this should no longer be coming out. And, but that's the kind of pollution challenge that is a legacy acid thing. And it's because an acid plant, it's not, you know, not real hard to figure that one out. But these folks, it almost was like on deaf ears, like, all they could think of was the atmosphere stuff.
This is proof positive for them to see, and the issue really hasn't gone away. We're still working on a lot of this.
Now you can see here, here's the before and after. See, this is the eroding shore. Mm. And here it is. They've seeded it and even planted rose bushes on top. That's the sand right there. But yeah, this right here is this bit right, slightly different angle, sorry. Mm. But they actually spent some money doing that. Mm-hmm. Now, years ago when I talked, back when we were on speaking terms, they got mad because they had to spend all this money. But he said, once they do this part, they'll see how it lasts through the winter. And if it's holding and working, then they'll go for some more of this. Because as you can see here, this is still this eroding acid gunk. You know, and so we'd like to see them simply extend this along. And basically, what they did is they dug it out, they added in layer of crushed limestone, and then geotextile cloth, then soil, and then a trench full of limestone. Where are we at? Oh, a trench full of limestone also at the bottom of it, so that any leachate there would get neutralized before it got in. And so the concept seemed very good. And so we're trying to do some. But now the company is so angry that they said if you know, you're allowed, anyone's allowed to go, beach combing on these flats. And however, the flats are owned out to here by the company. And so he said, so one day I was going there with my pH meter just to test some things. And the Searsport policeman comes down and says, Mr. Huber? Yeah. And he said, I've been asked by the owner of this, you know, to tell you that you'll be arrested for criminal trespass if you come here with your sensor equipment and testing things. And I had them all in a little bucket right there, hardly hiding them. And I thought, oh, shoot. Went back and just came back with a fishing rod, it'd be okay, right? He said, yeah, that'd be fine. You know, because everyone's allowed public for fishing and fouling, as the trust, public trust law says. And, but now I've noticed when I was walking it the other day with my didn't quite work cameras there, I saw a sign saying this area is under video surveillance. Oh man. It'd be funny to be the guy who has to watch that all day long. Mm-hmm. But anyway, despite all that, they do seem to have done some. We gave them a big thank you and all that. But I hope that there'll be more. And if I know that fertilizer plants were occurring all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so any one of those there's almost certainly more sulfuric acid plants, and it's a matter of looking at the old newspapers around the main coast to find these places. And that's what I told the ocean acidification folks, is find the low-hanging fruit. In fact, it's so low-hanging, it's down there in the mud. And so far, they have a grudging half sentence that sort of alludes to it in there. But, you know, they're all into the atmospheric stuff. But anyway, that's just, didn't mean to go off on that whole ramble there, but that was a thing. So, I just went to a conference. I thought, this is your area that could get deforested. That's the Glen Cove area of Rockport Harbor from two different directions. And you can see a lot of forest there. Mm-hmm. You know, this one is looking over the hospital and all that, but you can see plenty of forest between there and the village, and ditto from the village looking that way. And if these waters are protected in front of them, they won't be able to rush in lots of sloppy development that runs in, you know, all this stormwater and stuff. And if they develop, you know, they'll have to have grass buffers and all sorts of things. So they'll have to actually treat it as if the ocean actually is an ecosystem, you know, and not just this pain in the neck place. So that's what we're really hoping to get from this, is just reducing the harm that development can do. And there's too many real estate people angling around to stop them, but at least you can make them decent about it. And but anyway, going back to the interview, dear, sorry.
That's fine.
So tell me something about the Down East Lobstermen's Association. And if you have to attend to something, go right ahead. But thanks so much, also for the space here and all that. Okay. But ask you about the Down East Lobstermen's Association. You know, how did you become a member of it and then rise to the perhaps not all that enviable job of the executive director?
Funny you should ask. I was just talking about that this morning with a relative, and basically, I'm grateful to the board of directors of the Down East Lobstermen's Association, because my origin was to simply drive my husband to the meetings. But I am a fifth generation fisherman's family myself, boat building, fishing, and tugboat, merchant marine family, and that's what I did. I brought my husband, who's on the board of directors, Mike, to the meetings. But I showed a very big interest in everything. And my mother wasn't well at the time, and my husband wasn't well. It was just a series of caregiving situations. So the board of directors asked me if I would be interested. I was the secretary, asked to be the secretary. I was a secretary for 2 years. And then the current director had issues a lot like mine. Her husband wasn't well, and we needed to be able to put the time on it. So they asked me if I'd be interested in being the director. And I said, why me? Like anyone would, you know.
Well, it sounds
ask.
Like they were, sound like they thought your secretarial style worked well.
Yeah, I was working for McAllister Towing at the time, Portland Tugboat out of Portland. So it was a very good job, record keeping, working with dispatch, working within Homeland Security. And it was a very good position. But it was hard for me at the time, because I was in and out of emergency rooms, hospitals, you know, caring for family, basically. So they said, well, you know how to deal with the fishermen. I related to probably a good percentage of them. And I love these guys and their families. Mm. We're all like one big family, basically. And that's how I originated.
And so, have there ever been things where you had to, you know, make a decision where some of the board was going, no, but a majority ended up saying yes or something?
Oh, yes. We've had a divided board quite often. And we always have to, even my opinion, I might have an opinion, but I have to speak for the majority of what the board of directors wants.
And so do you feel well received where places you go? Because it's not just the legislature.
Yeah. I think these people, a lot of people from away, I think have a fear of a lot of the lobstermen because of some of the stories. The media likes to elaborate on some of the stories, you know, like the, when they call these TV shows,
reality television or something?
Yeah, lobster wars, things like that. But that's not so. I mean, for the most part, they're all good-hearted people.
And, I mean, there's these microscopic bit of times where, say, the Friendship and Monhegan Lobstermen got into it a bit over fishing grounds, but that got settled.
Yeah.
And all that. And I don't hear anyone in Monhegan going, those dang Friendship people. at least not much now anymore. All right. So now there's also the Maine Lobstermen's Association and the Maine Lobstering Union. So there seems to be a lot of representation there. Do you all have sort of separate niches in some ways, or, you know, because I don't know, someone could be a member of one and not the other, and they're all voluntary associations.
Yeah, we all have the same basic concept. We're representing the lobster industry, and on a lot of the boards, we sit together at the director's table. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree. Mm. But we all have, well, geographically, Down East has different concerns than, say, Portland and York and places like that. Down there they have a sandy bottom. Down East we have the rocky bottom. So the rope was definitely a different issue.
Oh.
The whale rope. A sinking rope down east is a lot more difficult to deal with.
And what you're referring to is the whale regulations that floating rope down on the bottom could end up snarling them as they go grubbing around on the bottom.
Yes.
The humpbacks and things.
Yeah. So we've all worked together on the whale rules. We, politically, we don't always agree. At the legislature this year, we all agreed on the bill for the Marine Patrol. We had differing opinions on the licensing bill, apprentices.
Mm-hmm.
But it all kind of comes together one way or another.
In the end, the Bay doesn't care if you're opinionated this way or that, or the coast, and it's going to be what it is there. And, so how many members are in the association?
We have over 300 members, but if we count the people we have through the associate members, there's quite a few.
Mm. But still, that's a lot. Are they spread up and down the coast or mostly concentrated in any particular area?
We originated down east in Washington County. Then it was Hancock County, our original charter. And this is our 25th year. We celebrate 25 years this year. And now we are spread along the whole coast. We all represent the same basic causes. And we do have some members in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and associate members even in Washington State.
Wow. Just that way they can sort of keep an ear to the ground by hearing about things do you have a newsletter you give out or some sort of monthly, maybe meeting reports? How do people know an associate member of Washington State?
Sure. We did have an individual newsletter that we had printed through a local printer, and it was wonderful. But it got to a point where it was very costly for, you know, we maintained that newsletter. So I think through the goodness of his heart, and we've always known each other for a long time, John Johansson with Maine Coastal News, asked if we'd like to have some space in his newspaper
mm-hmm.
publication. So for the past 4 years, we've been sharing space in the Maine Coastal News with John Johansson. I write a monthly director's report. We have a form in there for membership. We have ads in there, and our members are welcome to write a guest column, and we share the same common news.
Well, that's a great resource then, because that is, it's a free publication, I think.
Yes.
And I've seen it at the, you know, at the tackle places and all the, you know, the Rockland, well, it used to be called Rockland Marine, I forget what they call it now, and all those. And do you ever have a column or letters or anything in the Fisherman's Voice?
Not recently. To be honest, I've been very busy. Once in a while, Mike Crow will ask me, you know, to write something, but it's been a couple of years since I've done a guest column.
Now, turning to another subject, you've been building a boat.
Yes.
Now, not everyone does that sort of thing, and now this is a lobster boat?
Yes, it is.
Can you tell us something about it? I know that lobster boats have different traditions, different models, and so on.
Yes, it's a 32-foot Holland, and it's a family tradition. Is basically, I worked for the family boat business for 7-8 years, but you never really leave a family business. We've always been a part of it, the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so the hull is brand new. I helped lay up the hull with Peter Wing. I call him the master. He's been laminating hulls at the shop since about 1982. And he was my original crew as well when I worked there.
Mm.
And so it's been a good experience. My husband Mike is stepping in now with the topside work and the wiring. And our engine is one that belonged to my dad in the Red Baron. People are familiar with the racing boat.
I was about to say, that sounds like a racing boat from the lobster races.
Yeah, we're trying to revive the Red Baron. It's kind of like a transplant.
Now, wait, are you making a lobster racing boat or a lobster fishing boat?
We're going to lobster fish, mm-hmm. but we'd love to be part of the racing association again. Just not really to be the fastest and the mostest, but we want to participate again and be with everybody.
Hmm.
We think it's a good camaraderie.
I find that when they had the races in Rockland Harbor, the dozens of boats raft up together. You have this big floating party out there. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I was very pleased when Winter Harbor put their medallion out when they had their 50th anniversary. And they put a medallion out honoring the Young Brothers, my dad, and Brother Holland's boat. And it was Duffy and Duffy. The three boats were on the medallion.
Wow.
And we're part of the legacy. I'm very, very pleased to be part of the old legacy.
Okay. Now, just going back to your role as a executive director here, what issues do you see coming down the pike that you think might be a challenge in the future?
Well, the acidification, like you brought up, it's maybe it didn't pass this year in the legislature, but it is definitely being studied, and it's a continuation.
Mm-hmm.
If people felt discouraged, don't feel discouraged, because it's being researched, and I would look toward the next legislature. Mick Devon, Representative mm-hmm. Mick Devon, is the one that's very into that subject.
Oh, yeah. He's been sort of the leader in the legislature about this.
Yeah.
And must be painful for him the last couple times.
It's a lot of work.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, okay. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know, including if they were interested in joining the association or contacting you all? What would be information to contact Down East Lobstermen's
Association. Oh, thank you. Yeah, members are always welcome to join, even if people aren't fishermen. We have friends of Down East Lobstermen's Association. We're a nonprofit, 501(c).
Mm-hmm.
And we're very self-sustaining. We have our own scholarship fund, and our website is downeastlobsterman.org. We're on Facebook, and I also have a email, mm-hmm. dassett711@yahoo.com.
That's D-A-S-S-A-T-T?
Yes.
711@yahoo.com.
Yeah, and I had a fisherman call me just yesterday on the old-fashioned telephone, 207-338-1406, and asked for membership.
Great. All right. Well, look, I've been talking with Sheila Dassett, Executive Director of Down East Lobstermen's Association. Thank you very much, Sheila.
Thank you, Ron.
All right.